Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome back to our learning at Shari. Gein Chodesh, I should say. Gein Chodesh for all. Pretty unbelievable that Tu B'Shvat is in 2 weeks, and 4 weeks after that, Be'ezras Hashem, is Yom Tov of Purim. Time continues to go, so Gein Chodesh, it should be a month of Besoros Tovos for all of Klal Yisrael, all over the world, wherever they may be, and a month of Yeshua and Refuah for our people and our world and our land. We are learning as a zchus aliyah neshama from Miriam Fon, Miriam Bas Chaim Yitzhak, Allah HaShalom. May her neshama have a continuous aliyah in the merit of the Torah learning that we will share together this evening and Baruch Hashem weekly. So we are continuing our sefer. We are learning about obstacles to Ahavas Hashem and what prevents us from connecting to God and loving God. And primarily, the author is teaching us that it is the suffering in life, the obstacles that we face, be it emotional or financial or physical suffering, that impairs a person's ability to see the hand of God and causes a disconnect in their relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam. So we are going to continue inside the Sefer. Last time we finished page 235, and if you remember, we ended with a mashal that he gave over Rabbi Zevlef, the person's walking in the street, just to recap. And if you feel someone breaking his legs, he will be very, very angry. What did you just do? You just broke my legs. But if it's a doctor who says, listen, you have a fatal disease, but if I break your legs, I can heal you, then you will be very happy that they broke your legs because there is great benefit to Alice to that. Actually, after the shir, someone reached out to me, an online listener, someone who listens on YU Torah, and told me that there is a very similar mashal of the Dubno Magid to the mashal that I shared in the name of Rabbi Zev Lef. So we are on the top of page 236, okay? So tonight, we're actually going to be talking about I prepared a shir based on this paragraph here on the top of page 236, okay? It all depends on how you look at the Creator's management of the world. Which is what we said in the mashal last time from Rabbi Lef. It depends on how you see the person who breaks your legs, if they are a destroyer or a healer. If they're a healer, you might have to go through pain and inconvenience and difficulty, but you will be so happy because they saved you through that pain. So therefore, everything depends on how we look at the Creator's management of the world. If you take Chazal's statement literally, Chazal teach us in Maseches Brachos, Zayin Amar Aleph, that Hashem's anger lasts. How long does Hashem's anger last for each day? 0.01 of a second. Okay, so that's a pretty insignificant amount of time. Hashem's anger lasts for exactly 0.01 seconds each day. And if you think about that, and if you take it literally, you will think to yourself, well, just like sometimes I lose control, and sometimes I hit my son, not out of love, but with impatience and rage, and that's something we spoke about last time. Someone else emailed me, an online listener as well, YU Torah, and they emailed me asking me what was the name of the sefer we quoted from. We quoted from Planting a Building with Shlomo Wabi. They said it sounded very interesting, and they wanted to look into it further. So if you take the statement literally that Hashem gets angry for 0.01 seconds each day, you will think to yourself, just like I get angry sometimes, Hashem gets angry. Just like I punish, Hashem punishes. This is what you might think. Just like I lose myself to rage, Hashem loses himself to rage. In the words of the author, if you take Chazal's statement literally, that Hashem's anger lasts for exactly 0.01 seconds each day, you will think, just as you sometimes lose control and hit your son, not with love, but with impatience and rage, so too Hashem sometimes loses control and he can hit his son with chas v'shalom, impatience and rage. It will then seem to you as if suffering comes from divine anger. So in this paragraph, the author touches upon a very important point in our avodas Hashem, which is anger, ka'as. So when a person thinks, well, just like Hashem gets angry, I get angry, and it must be that just like sometimes I lose it, that must be what my suffering is. It must be chas v'shalom that Hashem, so to speak, in his anger is punishing me. Of course, that is absolutely incorrect. Basar v'dam gets angry and can lose control. Not so, of course, the Ribono Shel Olam, who is in control of every nanosecond of a fraction of a second, of a teeny tiny fraction, and in measurements that we can't even imagine, he is in control of this entire world all the time with intent and with purpose. But I would like to speak about a little bit this idea of anger as the Mechaber, the author, brings it up here, especially because this week's parsha has one of my favorite Divrei Torah. It's really an oxymoron when I say that, by the way, but I think they're all my favorite, but it really does have one of my favorite Divrei Torah on anger. So I'm going to screen share with you. I prepared it on the screen. Could you see my screen? Okay, thank you. So in this week's parasha, if you just want to listen, that's also fine. Oh, let me put you here so you could see Rashi, actually. Okay. So in this week's parasha, okay, last week was Shamos, and this week is Va'era. Moshe goes last week to Pharaoh, Parakeh, and Pharaoh says, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know God. Vayidati es Hashem, 5:2. Vagam es Yisrael lo ashaleach, mi Hashem es Rashma b'kol. I said the pasuk al border. I'm not sending these people, and they make the work worse. In this week's parsha, it opens up with the Arba Lashonos / Chamisha Lashonos of Geula, and what we have beginning to unfold is the Makos. We have the first of the seven plagues in this week's parsha. The last three plagues will be in Parsha's Bo, next week's parsha. One of my sons makes a joke, Dvar Torah, excuse me, every year, a Parsha's Bo. He says, yes, it's Dvar Torah, it's Parsha's Bo. Beis plus Aleph equals three. It's a third Parsha in the book of Shmos, and there are three Makos in the Parsha. Easy way to remember. The Gematria, the order of the Parshas, and many Makos are in Bo. Now, and next, in this week's Parsha, we have the plague of Dam, blood, and then we have frogs. Vayom Hashem el Moshe, God said to Moshe, Paraches Pasuk Aleph, Amar el Aaron, speak to Aaron, Nete es Yadcha b'matecha, Al ha-neharos, stretch your hand with your staff over the rivers, al ha-ye'orim v'al ha-agamim, over the streams and over the ponds, v'ha'al et ha-tzvardeim, bring up the frogs, al eretz Mitzrayim, over the land of Egypt. Pasuk Beis, right? Moshe cannot do dam tzvardeikinim, the first three plagues, blood, frogs, and lice, because he was saved by the water and by the sand. So the first two plagues, blood and frogs, Aaron had to strike the water, but the water saved Moshe. He didn't drown. It held him safe till Bat Paro came and saved him. And lice, he couldn't do that because he hid the Egyptian in the sand. So how could he turn the sand into lice? Okay, so Aaron does this makkah. Vayet Aaron et yado al meimi Mitzrayim. Aaron stretch his hand forth over the waters of Egypt. Vata'al ha-tzvardeya. I'm sure you've heard this. And the frog came up. Note it's lashon yachid, singular. Pasuk Aleph says that God predicted you will bring up frogs, tzvardeim, in the plural. But when the plague happens, it says tzvardeya in the singular, vatechas at Eretz Mitzrayim, and it covered the land of Egypt. So these frogs covered the land of Egypt, but how many frogs exactly came out of the river? Hashem predicts there will be frogs, plural, tzvardeim, and when Aaron stretches forth his hand, up comes a frog, Yachid, Tzvardeya. So Rashi says very famously, I'm sure you know this Rashi, Vata'al ha-Tzvardeya, the frog, singular, came up. Tzvardeya, achas haisa, yeah, it was taco, one frog. The Hayu Makin also, the Egyptians would hit her. Vihi matezes nechilim nechilim. Every time they hit her, she spit out baby frogs. So try and imagine this crazy scene in your mind. Out of the Nilus, which is their god, which has already been stricken by blood, and now the blood is finished, and it's 3 weeks later, and out comes this enormous frog out of there. I mean, just try and picture it in your head. It's an unbelievable scene. Enormous frog, and the Egyptians are so angry at the frog that they keep striking the frog. And every time they strike the frog, she spits out all these little frogs. This is the midrashic interpretation. The pshat is, says Rashi, a swarm of frogs is called in the Lashon Yachid. So a swarm of a million frogs is called a frog. Because what you're referring to is not a million frogs, but the swarm. It's a swarm. So it is Lashon Yachid singular, just like the kinim, harechisha, the creeping mass of kinim is referred to as one because you're referring to the mass. But what I want to talk about is the midrashic interpretation, not the pshat. So the drash, the deeper level of understanding is that there was one huge frog, and they would hit the frog, says Rashi, and she would spit out little frogs. That's the midrash. So you may have, I'm sure, have heard this Dvar Torah, and if you did hear it, it's worth it to repeat it. And if you didn't hear it, it's for sure worth it to hear it the first time. So the Egyptians, why did they keep hitting the frog? It was really in their hands. That means there was one frog on the shore of the river, one frog. And if they wouldn't have hit it, it would have just been one frog. But they keep hitting the frog. And where does it say the frogs go? Into their houses, into their bedrooms, into their beds, into their ovens, into their kneading bowls. But why do they keep hitting the frog? Stop hitting the frog. If you stop hitting the frog, she'll stop spitting out little frogs. And Mateza nichirim nichirim, but stop hitting her, she won't spit anything out. So it's a famous var. When a person becomes angry, they become so irrational that nothing they do makes any sense. The Egyptians were angry that a frog had come out of the Nilus. And so they hit it, and they saw the little frogs come out. So the rational thing would be to stop hitting the frog. The irrational thing to do when someone gives themselves over to anger, Rahman al-Atsan, oh, they knew. The person has to work on their control. The irrational thing to do is to keep hitting the frog, and more and more and more come out. That's what they did. Why? Because when a person is overtaken by ka'as, by anger, by rage, when they're not in control, they act in a totally irrational way and ultimately bring destruction upon who? Never mind everyone else around you, but who ultimately do we bring destruction upon? Our very own selves. So I have to tell you, I never looked up the Medrash. I always just know the Rashi, like I'm sure you know the Rashi. But today, I decided to actually see what the Medrash has to say, the Lashon of the Medrash that Rashi is actually quoting. So this is my Medrash Tanchuma. It's really Hashem's Medrash Tanchuma, but we have the Sefer in our house. So I am going to quote from you. Whoops, wrong page. Here's my sticky. Okay, so this is Medrash Tanchuma, Parshas Va'era Yud Dalet. Okay, so the Medrash, it's actually a long piece here, and gives the rationale and explanation into all the plagues. Tanchuma 14, Tanchuma Yudalad to Parshas Va'era. Tzfardeim, lama hevi alehem. Why did God bring frogs upon them? Mipnei shahayu mishtabdin b'Yisrael, because they were enslaving Israel, shibud, v'omrin lahen, and the Egyptians would say to the Israelites, havil lanu shekatzim urimasim, bring us shekatzim, bring us insects, bring us creeping things, l'fichach v'ta'ala tzfardeh, so they made the Israelites bring them vermin and bugs and toads and frogs and tadpoles and minnows and shkatzim and rimasim, creeping things and insects. So therefore, mida kenega mida, Hashem brought them a frog from the river. Continues the Medrash. Bisha'a shahayamogzin etakos, at the time when they would pour the cup, mitmalei minatzvardim, it would be filled with frogs. Shanemar, like the Pasuk says, so while they had the plague, when they would go to fill up their cup, it was filled with frogs, like the Pasuk says, va'alu, and the frogs will come up, uva'u beveisacha, they will come into your homes, ubemish arosacha, and into your kneading bowls. Actually, let me just show you the Pasuk on the screen. Why not? Whoops. Here we go. Okay. Here we go. Parak Zayin Pasuk Chavchet V'Sharatz Hayar. This is the prediction of the plague, and the river will teem with frogs. Va'alu, and they will come up. Uba'u beveisacha, they will come into your house. Ubechador mishkavcha, and into your bedroom. Va'al mitosacha, and into your bed. Sounds exceedingly unpleasant. Ubeveisavadacha, into the houses of your servants. Ubeamecha, into your nation. Uvisanuracha, and into your ovens. Ubemish arosacha, and into your kneading bowl. So basically, they wherever they will come up into your homes, into your bedrooms, into your bed, into the houses of your servants, into your nation, into your ovens, and into your kneading bowls. That's where they will be. Really, it was up to them. So I'm continuing with the Medrash. Okay. So the Medrash says when they would fill up their cup, it would be full of frogs, like the Pasuk says, and it quotes the Pasuk I just showed you. When is the kneading bowl found next to the oven? B'sha'asha tanur cham, when the oven is warm. By the way, it's so interesting because this is how you're supposed to rise challah. It should be in a warm spot. So that's what the Medrash says. When is the kneading bowl next to the oven? Because they went into the ovens and the kneading bowls. At the time that the oven is warm, kol kach lama. Why were the frogs going next to the hot oven and into the oven and into the warm kneading bowl? La'aso ritzon baram. They wanted to do the will of their creator. So even if it meant being moser nefesh and going into the hot oven and the warm kneading bowls, and it wasn't good for them, I don't know, what are they, amphibians, cold-blooded? Nevertheless, they did this to do the will of their creator. And now the Medrash addresses the quote by Rashi, Kasuv Echad Omer, one Pasuk says, Visharat Hayar Tzfardeim, the river will teem with frogs. The Kasuv Echad Omer, on the other Pasuk says, Vata'al HaTzfardeya, one frog came up. So which one was it? Were there many frogs or was there one frog? Rabbi Akiva Omer, by the way, Rashi does not quote it in the name of Rabbi Akiva, but the Medrash does. Rabbi Akiva Omer, the Tana Rabbi Akiva says, Tzfardeya achas haisa. There was actually taka one frog. V'hayu hamitzri makin oso. And the Egyptians were hitting her. Umatazas tzfardeim harbe. And she was spitting out many, many frogs. So this goes back to the word that I told over, but I just wanted to bring you the lashon and for our interest and our education purposes, we should go back to the source. Rashi's quoting the Medrash Tanchuma here, that Rabbi Akiva teaches there was one frog and they kept hitting it and many little frogs came out. So the famous Musar word, when a person becomes angry, they lose all rationality, and we start to do things that are not rational and make no sense. If you stop hitting the frogs, you won't have. If you stop hitting the frog, there won't be other frogs. Bring destruction upon yourself. And I also thought, this is my Medrash Tanchuma. You can see it as preparing shir. I made a footnote, and I put an asterisk, and I wrote that I think that it's very significant that it's specifically Rabbi Akiva of the Ahavta L'Rei Acha Kamocha fame who teaches us this lesson. Rashi does not quote in the name of Rabbi Akiva, but the Medrash does, because Rabbi Akiva is the one who Rashi tells us to Parshas Kedoshim, that love for your fellow, what you love for yourself, is a klal gadol b'Torah, a great principle of the Torah law, is to love for your fellow as you love for yourself. The same Rabbi Akiva here teaches us by way of drush that if a person gives himself over to anger, they become completely irrational, ultimately bringing destruction upon themselves, upon their friends, and upon society at large. So it's an extremely powerful word about the frogs and the tzfardeim. I'm quoting a sefer, a book from called Portraits of Prayer. It's a short vignette from Portraits of Prayer. It's very nice. Rabbi Eliezer al-Abish. I enjoy this stories in here very, very much. And he tells over a story, which I'm sure that you may have heard, but relates very much to our shir. Rabbi Mordechai of Neshetz, Poland, deeply desired a pair of tzitzis from Eretz Yisrael. He wanted tzitzis made from the wool of a sheep that ate from the grass of Eretz Yisrael. However, in the 1700s, as one can well imagine, it was very difficult for someone from Europe to get anything from Eretz Yisrael. But Rabbi Mordechai was very determined, and sure enough, after much hard work, he got hold of a woolen garment from Eretz Yisrael. He gave it to his Talmud, and he asked the Talmud to make for him a pair of tzitzis. The Talmud was carefully doing just that when, to his horror, he realized he mistakenly cut two openings in the head of the tzitzis instead of one. The garment, the precious garment that he worked so hard to procure of Mordechai Neshetz Poland, was now ruined. The student was so afraid and embarrassed, he hesitantly brought the cloth to Rabbi Mordechai, and he expected to be rebuked for his negligence. At first, when Rabbi Mordechai saw the precious woolen tzitzis that he worked so hard to obtain and they were ruined now, he turned beet red, his face reflecting anger and anguish. But after a few tense moments, he smiled and he said, "This pair of tzitzis indeed was supposed to have two openings." The student was not quite sure what the Rabbi meant. "Rabbi, it was meant to have two openings," he whispered. But Mordechai explained, "Yes, one opening is to put my head through, and one opening is to test me, whether I could control myself or if I would fly into a rage. I will keep this pair of tzitzis to remind me every morning when I put them on and when I get dressed for the day, not to get angry at anyone throughout the day." So we definitely can lose ourselves, like the Egyptians. I don't know if anyone remembers, but one of the things we learned in the Sefer a very long time ago, and it's very profound teaching, is that inside every person is every biblical personality. It's very powerful. So inside every one of us is that Egyptian who was standing by the Nilus River striking that frog, and it didn't make any sense because it's croaking out little frogs every time we hit it. And we too need a reminder to remind ourselves we are not the Almighty who becomes angry, and not even so. We still have to explain what that means, 0.01 seconds each day. In a lifetime of Tikkun of Midos and Avodas Hashem, it is something that we must strive mightily to control. I'm going to quote from the Igaris HaRamban, the famous letter of Nachmanides. So the Ramban says, a letter for the ages, Igaris HaRamban, which he wrote to his son, and he told the son he should read it once a day. So you know what? When was it written, actually? This letter was sent by the Ramban from the city of Acre in Eretz Yisrael to San Nachman in Catalina, Spain. Interesting. In order to inspire him to act with humility, he instructed his son to read this letter once each week. So he wrote it in Eretz Yisrael and he sent it to his son Nachman in Catalina, Spain. Okay. The Ramban was born in Spain in 1195, for your reference. So that means he lived in the 1200s. At the age of 72, the Ramban settled in Eretz Yisrael. He arrived in the port of Akko in the month of Elul 1267. Wow. In a famous letter to his son Nachman, the same son, the Ramban describes the situation in the land. What should I tell you in regard to this land? This is in the 1200s, almost 800 years ago, right? Yeah. Many are its forsaken places, and great are its wasted areas. The truth of the matter is, the more sacred the place, the greater the devastation here. Jerusalem is the most desolate place of all. So he writes this letter, a spiritual legacy to his son. And what does he say? Shema b'ni musar avicha. My son, hear the chastisement of your father. V'al titosh torat imecha. Do not, from Mishle, do not discard, do not reject the teachings of your mother. Tisnaheg tamid ledaber kol devarecha b'nachas. How does he begin the letter? It's a lengthy letter. I'm sure that many are familiar with the letter. But you should always speak all of your words with nachas, pleasantness. L'chol adam, to every man. U'b'chol eis, at every time. My son told me that a boy in his class, in his pod, in his class, a sibling got married in Eretz Yisrael, and only the parents were able to go. A sibling got married in Eretz Yisrael, and the parents were able to go, and all the other siblings were here. They missed the chasana. So the class went, and they were dancing like on the lawn for the boy outside the house. I think he was like zooming into the wedding or something. And a car stopped, this happened this afternoon, and started screaming at them. A non-Jewish person screaming at them, you're not wearing masks, you have blood on your hands, and the car wouldn't move, screaming. So I said to my son, were you with an adult? Was there anybody with you? So he said, yeah, the Rebbe was there. So I said, what did the Rebbe say? The Rebbe just kept saying, have a nice day, ma'am. Thank you very much. Have a nice day. And the person wouldn't move. The rabbi said, you know, I think you're blocking traffic. And then after she drove away, she came back and she kept screaming at them, you have blood on your hands and you're murderers. And the rabbi was just saying, have a nice day. Thank you very much. So the Ramban says, Tisnahig Tommy, the Daber called Vrecha Benachas, the Chol Adam, Uvechol Eis, Ubazeti Natsal Minakas. If you speak all of your words with pleasantness to every man at every time. Like this, you will be saved from rage. Shehi mida ra'a lahachti b'nei adam. It is a bad attribute, bad character trait that causes man to stumble, to sin. V'kein amru rabbisein is yechona levrecha. Like the rabbis say, Maseches Nedarim, kol ha-ko'es, kol minei gehenim sholtim. But anyone who becomes angry, all sorts of gehenim, the netherworld, rules over him. Someone who is angry, it's like he's in Gehenna. Chanemar haser kas milibecha. Like the pasuk says, remove anger from your heart. A pasuk from Kohelas. The ha'aver ra'a mibsarecha. And remove bad from your flesh. The ein ra'a ela Gehenna. And ra'a is nothing other than Gehenna. And when you will be saved from anger, then humility, which is a very good midah, will be aroused in your heart. So I heard Rabbi Zev Lef say, he wasn't talking about anger specifically, he was talking about kina, taiva, and kavod. And when it comes to kina, taiva, and kavod, jealousy, desire, and the quest for honor, which if a person desires those things and doesn't get them, they can be prone to anger. So Chazal say, in Pirkei Avos, kina, taiva, va kavod, jealousy, kina, taiva, desire, and the quest for honor, motzines ha'adam min olam. Remove a person from the world. So what does that mean? They remove a person from this world. So Rav Aaron, from the world. So Rav Aaron Lichtenstein explains it doesn't just zatzal, it doesn't just mean it removes a person in a beautiful sefer, a small purple sefer by Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Remember what it's called? Something light. Something about light. Okay. So Rav Aaron Lichtenstein teaches on that Mishnah, it means they don't only those negative traits remove you. And you could say the same thing about kas from the next world, but they remove you from this world as well. A person's olam haza existence, when he is a person who has lust and desire and chases after kavod, he doesn't enjoy a pleasant existence in this world because he's always so focused on jealousy, what someone else has and what I lack. How can you enjoy your portion? But I just heard Rabbi Zev left the other week at a different dimension. Kina taive v'kavod motzina sa'adam min ha'olam. He said it means something else. Motzina sa'adam min ha'olam means it removes you from reality. When you are a person who is filled with kina, jealousy, taiva, desire, and kavod, the quest for honor, motzina sa'adam min ha'olam, they remove you from the reality of this world. You can't see things properly. You can't see things with clarity, said Rabbi Zev left. You are removed from the reality of this world, and that blinds your ability to see properly. And you could say the exact same thing about ka'as, that the ka'as, a person, when he gives himself over to anger, kalmine gehenim shaltim bo, you could say it doesn't only mean gehenim, after Mei Avas from Shana, we should all be saved from such a thing, but even when he lives here, he is so removed from the reality of this world that he's in his own tortured existence. He's torturing other people with his anger, but ultimately he's torturing himself as well. He's a tortured soul. So this is the art scroll, a letter for the ages. It's the Geras Ramban with commentary into each line. So chapter 3, they're very, very short chapters. Each chapter is on one line of the famous letter of the Ramban. Shehi midara lahachti b'nei adam. Anger is a very bad character trait that causes men to sin. Anger, so now I'm quoting from the commentary of art school. Who wrote the sefer? By Rabbi Avram Chaim Fuhr. Anger is not only an individual character trait, it is a barometer of personality as well. A wise man once advised, before you take someone as your friend, observe him when he is angered. His conduct under pressure will tell you volumes about his true nature. And by the way, it's funny, because I wasn't planning this at all. Last week, I wasn't planning to quote Rav Wolbe. And when I was praying for tonight's year, I didn't even know what I was going to be teaching until I sat down to prepare. And here, boom, it's about anger. And last week we spoke about, if you remember, Rav Wolbe, who speaks about harsh words can be more terrifying for the child than a light spanking. So it's interesting that both weeks really touch upon this topic unintentionally, but that's where the sefer goes. When a person consistently loses his temper, he loses his rational sense as well. Again, Rabbi Zavlov says, it takes you out of reality, these negative character traits. You can't see things reasonably or rationally. The very basis of one's relationship with God can become endangered, for there is nothing to restrain him. And therefore, the Gemara states in Masechah Shabbos, the man who loses himself to anger, we know, is considered to have worshipped idols. It's idol worship is equated, or I should say, anger, giving himself over to anger, is equated with idolatry. When a person becomes unrestricted, he approaches idolatry. Unable to think clearly, the man who is lost to his fury loses perspective. The crooked path appears straight. The forbidden seems permissible. Insults, quarreling, and slander are no longer distant from him. Insults of other people, quarreling with other people, and slander to others are no longer distant. Although an otherwise sensitive man, the angered person may in his fury come to humiliate people publicly, and it's 1,000% true. When no longer guided by reason, even the most unspeakable acts come within reach. Eliyahu the prophet said from Maseches Brachos, if you never come to anger, you will never come to sin. Furthermore, the Gemara stresses in Maseches Pesachim, the consequence of falling prey to wrath. Whoever loses his temper, if he is a scholar, he will lose his wisdom. If he is a prophet, he will lose his prophecy. Indeed, the Gemara warns that a man's fury can potentially destroy his life. Sefer Chassidim illustrates this with the following tale. Sefer Chassidim 655. One man who controlled his anger saved himself from destroying his family. Once there was a son who was extraordinarily respectful to his father. on his deathbed, the father said, "My son, you honored me in my lifetime, and now you must honor me after my death. I command you, if you should ever be overcome by anger, hold in your anger overnight. Don't act on it. Don't give yourself over to rage." After his father's death, the son was forced to embark on a prolonged journey. It took him to distant lands for many years. Unbeknownst to him, the wife he had left behind was expecting his child. After his years of absence, the husband returned home unannounced. Joyously, he was going to surprise his beloved wife. But as he approached his bedchamber, he saw his wife with a handsome young man, a stranger. The husband became fiercely jealous. He reached for his dagger, and suddenly he remembered his father's dying wish. He must hold in his rage overnight. The next day, he was shocked to discover that that young man, alone with his wife, was none other than his own son, the child his wife had born during his long absence in his years away. And thus the man was saved from tragically slaughtering his own family. The Rambam teaches in Hilchos Deos that a person should balance his personality traits. We must avoid the extremes of any one trait. Okay, so can't be to the extreme of this way, and it can't be to the extreme of ecstatically, overly, inappropriately happy, and it can't be to the extreme of inappropriately, overly sad your whole life. There has to be a balance, the Shavil HaZahav, the golden median path upon which a person walks. He should endeavor to be strong yet flexible, compassionate yet firm. The Rambam notes, however, so here it's interesting, the Mechaber, the author of the Sefer, writes there's one exception. There's actually, as far as I am aware and have learned and seen the Ramban inside, two exceptions. Okay, but for purposes of the Sefer, one. The Rambam notes, however, one exception to this rule. In his reference to anger, there is no middle way. I would tell you, you could look up the Rambam. The Rambam does write also in regard to humility, gaiva. There is no middle path. A person with these two character traits, says Maimonides, the Rambam, must be all the way to the extreme of not having them. There's no room for anger, and there's no room for gaiva. A person must be all the way. And it's interesting, because the haughty of heart God cannot dwell with, and the angered person is like one who worships idols. So both of these character traits, what the Rambam advises you to stay far, far, far away, are traits that God says, I cannot tolerate. Someone who worships idols is like a kofar bi'ikar. It's not like an idol worshiper, so kofar bi'ikar. If you worship idols, you deny the validity and the omnipotency and the might of God in this world. And so too, if you become angry, you're like an idol worshiper. And furthermore, one who is a baal gaiva, Hashem says, the gasus haruach, he and I cannot dwell together. Now, in regard to tonight's topic, in reference to anger, there is no middle path. A person must strive for an opposite extreme, avoiding wrath even in situations where anger is indeed justifiable. It's so interesting. I don't have the Sefer in front of me because I wasn't planning to say it, but it came to my mind as I was talking. I'm reading through the book of the biography of Irving Bunim. My thanks to Shoshana Lawrence for giving me a copy of the Sefer as a gift. I really appreciate it. It's absolutely fascinating. Written by Yisan Amos Bunim. I'm sure you know about Irving Bunim, the head of the Vat Hatzalah, the closest confidant of Rav Aaron Kotler Zatzal. And he was the head of the Vat Hatzalah, who worked night and day to save Jews from Churban Europa and help them rebuild in the aftermath. It's called A Fire in His Soul. It's excellent. Very well written, thoroughly researched, many footnotes. Fascinating. So I was just reading it last night. And when they would go around collecting, Rav Aaron Kotler was collecting, he was trying to build up Lakewood Yeshiva. And at that time, American Jews did not believe so much, for the most part, in building up a makam of Torah. So they went to many people who really degraded Rav Kotler. And Irving Bunim would become very angry. And Rav Kotler always told him not to be such a kana, don't be so angry, calm down. And one time they went to a certain person and they got a very, very low amount of money. Oh no, in this case, they didn't get any money. And Irving Bunim was very upset. He was very angry. Rav Kotler was very calm. And he said, don't be angry. He said, you feel bad for me, don't feel bad for me. You should feel bad for that man. You shouldn't be angry at him. You should have pity on him. Because he's losing out on the schar of upholding a makam of Torah. Don't be angry. And don't feel bad for me that I wasted my day. If you want to feel bad for anybody, said Rav Aaron Kotler Zatzal, you should feel bad for the man who lost the opportunity to give to Torah, to hold up to Torah, to be a zvulun and a yisachar zvulun partnership. So there's never a place, and the Gedolim show us this. We must strive for the opposite extreme, avoiding wrath, even in situations where anger may be justifiable. Similarly, Sefer Hamidos writes, the trait of anger is undeniably evil. It is natural to wild and unclean animals. If you study, it's very, very interesting. Ma'achalos Asuros, I taught it 1 year in depth in my Parsha class. It was fascinating. Parsha Shmini, about birds of prey. They are clawing birds and the signs of the not kosher birds, what they represent. The Ramban writes they're hot-blooded, they are carnivorous, they claw other creatures, and so we're not allowed to eat them because we're not allowed to embody those character traits. If you think of an eagle, for example, they have talons, an owl, I mean, that's how Hashem made them. They serve a purpose, they're beautiful animals, it's Marabu Masach Hashem, but they're forbidden to us because they are birds of rage. The trait of anger is undeniably evil. It is natural only to wild and unclean animals, to beasts and birds of prey. Think of a lion, its teeth, how it rips apart the flesh. The angry man, and think about on the other hand, a kosher animal, like a cow, it chews its cud, and then it goes, the food goes down, and then it comes up, and then it goes down, and then it comes up. I think a cow is four stomachs. Time for contemplation. When you have to chew upon something, think about something. So don't act in a rage. Swallow it. Bring it back up in your mind. Think about it again. Don't quickly tear apart the matter at hand like a wolf. Like a lion, we're not allowed to eat those animals. Like a cow that chews its cud, any animal really, a sheep that chews its cud, it indicates a reflection upon a certain matter. The trait of anger is undeniably evil. It is natural to wild and unclean animals, to beasts and birds of prey. The angry man is similar to a viper, whose food, the dust of the earth, is available wherever it travels. So too, the angry man may always find cause to become abrasive, regardless of the situation in which he finds himself. Anger does not remain inside itself. It affects those who live around it as well. The people who hit that frog didn't only bring damage upon themselves. It's an indication that their anger affected the whole society. It affects everyone around them. It affects the whole household. Let's say only the Baal Bais was hitting the frog, but everyone in the household suffered from that wrath, because the wrath brought the frogs into the home. The wrath brings the damage. It's terrible. Shem Shav Rachmanis, and help us into a home. When I say us, I mean the cloud. Anger does not remain inside itself. It affects those who live around it as well. King Solomon advises in Mishlei, Somamech, do not associate with a man of temper and do not come near a man of wrath. Why? Lest you learn from his ways and endanger your soul. Mishlei 22, 24 through 25. Anger is indeed contagious. Rav Shamsher and Fall Hirsch teaches, by associating with a short-tempered person, one may come to adopt his nature. So what you see as forbidden ultimately might become permissible. The more you are around that type of person, you see them acting in such a rash, coarse, frightening, uncalled for, undignified manner, and you might become immune to that behavior and think it's okay. I find it so true with the things that we forward and post in public forums as well. Certain words and phrases and memes and stories that we might have found embarrassing or inappropriate once upon a time. Become so, what's the word I'm looking for? Immune, so callous that we don't even realize that some of what we're posting ourselves is really not appropriate. The more we associate with something negative, the more negative, chas v'shalom, we may become. Why did Chazal say, oy the rasha, oy the shcheino? Woe unto the wicked person, and woe into his neighbor, unto his neighbor. What did Reuven have to do with Mechilkas Korach? If you associate with the neighbor, they're going to be drawn in. Similarly, it is not only the angry person himself who can be led to transgression, for one man's anger can bring others to sin as well. The Talmud of Maseches Gittin, listen to this. I didn't look it up, okay? The sources that this sefer is quoting, A Letter for the Ages by Rabbi Avraham Chaim Fur. It's published by Art School in Masora. I did not look up the sources. Okay, inside. I still remember once I quoted a source from a secondary source. Actually, I think I remember this year. It was a Megillas Rus year. And I was quoting from a story from a Megillas Rus. Someone reached out to me to tell me the source was incorrect. And she was right. The source was incorrect because I went to look it up, but it was quoted incorrectly. So if there's a mistake here, I'm just quoting from the Sefer. It's not an excuse. Perhaps I should look up every source. I don't know. I didn't have time. Similarly, it is not only the angry person himself who can be led to transgression. For one man's anger can bring others to sin also. The Gemara Maseches Gittin warns, a man should, listen to this, a man should be exceedingly careful not to show anger in the presence of his wife, lest she come to desecrate the Shabbos. What does that mean? Rashi explains, a wife who lives in fear of her husband's rage in order to protect herself may come to light candles or finish cooking after the onset of Shabbos. She is so afraid, Rachmana Litzlan, of the rage of her spouse or her husband, that in order to protect herself, this is what Rashi says again, I did not look it up, but it's very powerful, it's probably worth looking at. Maseches Gittin, it says here 6b. So Rashi says she lives in constant fear, and in order to protect herself, she might come to transgress to be Mechal Shabbos. Indeed, in many ways, concludes this chapter, the repercussions of the repercussions of a man's anger reach far beyond himself. So we started this year, well, in the paragraph in the book that talks about anger, and a human being might become angry and lose control and hit their son, not out of love, like Hashem's patch to us, but rather with impatience and with rage. So we started this year after that paragraph with frogs. We looked at the frogs and we saw the reward, if you will, to the frogs. Not the reward to the frogs. I'm sorry. We saw that the frog was, forget what I just said, I was talking about something else, which I'm going to get to right now. We saw that there was one big frog, and as they hit it, there were more and more and more frogs popping out of that frog, because when a person gives themselves over to rage, they lose themselves entirely. And Parshas Mishpatim, at the end of Perachav Beis, we are told, Va'anshe Kodesh Tiyunli, can you see it's at the right at the bottom of my screen, Perachav Beis Pasuk Lamed, Hashem tells us in Mishpatim, and men of holiness you shall be to me, ubasar besada treif alo sochelu, and flesh that has been torn in the field. We use the word treif to mean not kosher, but treif really means something that has been torn. So it might have been a perfectly kosher cow before it ended up in the field, torn apart by a lion. You can't eat it. Ubasar besada treif alo sochelu. You should not eat torn flesh, torn in the field. So what should you do? La kalav tashlichun oso. You should throw it to the dog. So actually, I should have put it on Sefaria so I could show you Rashi. So I'm going to do that right now. It's the very last pasuk to Perachav Beis in Shemos. There we go. If my computer wants to cooperate with me. Why is it not cooperating with me? It's not letting me click the pasuk I want to click. You see? It clicked the pasuk before and the pasuk after. So Hashem doesn't want me to click on this pasuk, apparently. Okay. So I'm just going to look at the pasuk and tell you. What is my computer doing? Va'anshe kodesh tiyunli, men of holiness, you shall be to me. Ubasar basada treif alo sochelu, and torn flesh in the field you may not eat. Lakav tashlichun oso. This is really bothering me. There is no reason for this to be doing this. Why do you give the torn meat to the dogs? So Chazal tell us the reason you give the torn meat to the dogs, who knows, I'm sure some of you know, but I can't hear you because you're on mute. The reason you give the torn meat to the dogs is because in Egypt, the dogs didn't bark on Leil Yetzias Mitzrayim. The Jews were leaving and it was a scary time and a frightening time and the dogs held their tongue and they did not bark. Therefore, as a reward, you should give them the torn flesh. Oy, Baruch Hashem. Here we go, okay? we found it. Did everyone see? Baruch Hashem. So Rashi says, why? Vilimdecha teaches you hakas of the Torah comes to teach you she'en akosh baruch hu mekapech schar kol bria. Hashem does not hold back. Oh my gosh, it's 9:15. Let me just finish this Torah, please. Hashem does not hold back the reward of any creature. Shenem, like the pasuk says in Sefer Shmos, Parshas Bo, lechol b'nei Yisrael lo yechatz kerev l'shonu, to the children of Israel, no dog sharpened its tongue. So Hashem said, oh, the dogs were quiet by Yitzias Mitzrayim. Can you imagine the terror if the dogs were barking? It's a terrifying Rabbi Lau. Shlita says he remembers three things about the war: boots, dogs, and trains. He remembers many things about the war, but the three images that stand out in his mind from out of the depths are boots, dogs, and trains. The dogs have been barking and into a wild frenzy. The people might not have been able to leave. They would have been so scared. So the dogs are quiet. So Hashem says, oh, the dogs are quiet. Amar kosh barku tunu lo scho. Give the dog its reward. So what should you do when you have basada trefa, when you have torn flesh in the field? Don't discard it. Give it to the dogs. So wait a minute. Didn't we learn in Medrash Tanchuman that the frogs went into the kneading bowls when the kneading bowls were next to the oven, which is warm? Why would they do that? They're cold-blooded. They're amphibians. They live in a cold river. They don't want to go where it's hot. Ah, to do the will of their creator. They even went into the warm kneading bowls. They even jumped into the ovens. So who should you give the torn flesh to? Shouldn't you give it to the frogs? They were willing to jump into the oven, so the dog didn't bark. Yasher koach, very nice. Of Asher Arieli, Shlita of the Mir, told to me by Alyssa Axelrod. In his name, teach us. It's easier to jump into the oven than to hold your tongue. The frogs jumped into the oven. It's very nice, says Hashem. Thank you. Yasher kochem. No, I'm not making a joke. But the dogs didn't bark. They didn't lose themselves to rage. They didn't become angry and terrify everyone around them. That's godless. That's Mesiras Nefesh. That's unbelievable. So what should you do? Give them a reward. If you have torn meat, what the frogs did was nice. But sometimes it's easier to jump into an oven than to hold your tongue. Next time you will continue in understanding and learning further that when the Ribbono Shel Olam brings trials and tribulations upon us, Chalila v'chas, it's not like the rage of a human being who reacts with impatience and rage and might hit his son not from love, but rather it's from the deepest recesses of the Ribbono Shel Olam's love for us, even when it is not readily apparent. We shall week of Siyata Deshmaya to emulate the dogs who held their tongues when need be. Neshama of Miriam Frod, Miriam Bas Chaim Yitzhak, Allah Sham Shemera, continuously in this chus of this shir. I thank everyone for joining, and we should have a Gittin Chodesh for all. Thank you so much, everybody. Kol Tov. Thank you.